If you really stop to think about it, waste really is one of America's biggest challenges. I can't begin to imagine being charged with managing waste for more than 21 million municipal, commercial, and industrial customers. And how about managing the largest heavy-duty natural gas truck fleet in North America? Then all that up to being a partner in helping to pull off the greenest show on grass. I cannot wait to interview this guest. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. We thank you for listening and for being a part of our world. And before we literally get on with the show, a big shout out and thanks to the sponsor of this show and a great partner of Mrs. Green's World, Tanks Green Stuff. Their magic? They take green waste and turn it into award-winning organic compost. They create local jobs, and through their important work, they make our planet a more healthy and more livable one. To find out more about them and their important work, please visit them at tanksgreenstuff.com, and I really hope you do. Now let's get rolling, literally. Please join me in welcoming our guest for this next hour. His name is Lee Spivak. And he is the Sustainability Services Senior Associate, that's a lot of S's, for Waste Management. Lee, you can tell that I'm really excited that we finally get to spend an hour together and I get to grill you about mostly the Phoenix Open and spend some time finding out about the waste management machine and all of the pretty amazing things that I happen to believe you're doing. So welcome and thanks for taking the time to be with me.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here as well and talk with you about all those fun topics.
I know there's a lot to cover. So let's actually start by trying to help us get our heads around just how big your company is as the leading provider of comprehensive waste management services in North America. And that's a big charge. There's lots of waste out there. And I know that you provide services that range from collection and disposal, the obvious ones, to recycling and renewable energy generation. So try to just give us a sense for how large an operation this is, the size, how many people work for. Paint a picture for us.
Sure. It's a pretty large company, as you mentioned. Over 40,000 employees and pretty diverse operations. Kind of touching on what you just went into, it's services across the country for a variety of different customers and municipalities, commercial properties, hospitals, really the any type of property you can think of, we handle their materials. And at the same time, we're also the leading developer, operator, and owner of landfill gas to energy facilities in the U.S. We have 109 fueling stations in North America, 25 of which are open to the public. And kind of all of that really works towards the larger goal of creating a near zero emission collection fleet, which, again, I'm not too related to the actual hauling of the materials in my everyday job. But I love working for a company that's trying to think big like that.
And as I was preparing the notes and trying to, you know, it's only an hour and you have 40,000 employees and they're doing a lot. And I was going to say is if you haven't seen a waste management truck in your lifetime, call me and tell me where you live because I have never been anywhere that I haven't seen waste management trucks. So it's a really big deal. And before we get into the charge of your own particular group within waste management, I got to be thinking, how did you get here? What's your background and how you came to be where you are in this huge operation?
Sure. I, from a young age, was really interested in traveling internationally. It led me to live in China when I was in high school and travel there in college. And I say all of that because I when I was there, I got really into environmental policy. And after college, I went to graduate school at the Monterey Institute of International Studies, now the Middlebury Institute, got a master's degree in international environmental policy and Chinese there, and ended up not going back to China, but learning about waste management and the team that I, you know, became a part of and wanting to, you know, join that group. And the rest is history. I've been with the company over 7 years now.
And you are building it up. And I always am curious, just go a little bit, what do you think made you, this is not a psychological profile building, but What got you excited about waste? The size of the problem, the enormity of it, what to do with it? It's just not everybody's path. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally understand. And I think it wasn't just waste, but it was waste management. We were just talking about the scale of the company. When we do projects, and I knew this before I joined, but when this team does projects, it's never just one location. It's typically maybe piloting a location or learning about a location and then rolling out at a much larger degree, a company's whole portfolio, you know, 400 hotels across the country, that kind of thing. And that kind of scale is really what brought me in. I also was just aware of waste management's overall effort to transform from being known as just a waste hauler to being a true comprehensive environmental service provider. And I'm taken in by large companies that are trying to make that effort throughout all of their operations.
And they're the ones, the large companies are the ones that have the ability to do what I call move the green needle forward, because it's so massive. And if some small company in one municipality does it, it's great. And no effort goes unapplauded. But when you have a company like Waste Management involved in massive efforts in almost every piece of their organization, it really helps the planet in a much more significant way. And that's, of course, what I was feeling as I was, you know, doing the research for this. So let's zero in on what I would call not the big beyond a large-scale operation, which it is, but your very important consulting team within Waste Management that started it just a little bit over a decade ago from what my research revealed. Tell us about your group, about your role within the group. I'd like to know, you know, what you do and just wax poetic for us about what your role is and what impact you're making with your group.
Absolutely. So Waste Management has a team that's called Sustainability Services. It's a larger group comprised of a few subsections, and my team is the consulting arm of Sustainability Services, basically acting as WM's in-house sustainability consulting team. We drive sustainability internally, and we work with clients across every sector, like I mentioned, manufacturing, commercial properties, food and retail, healthcare, events, hospitality, you name it, our team works on it. And we offer consulting services even when Waste Management isn't the hauler. So we're able to kind of offer that perspective to our clients when they need a waste hauler in their ear, someone that has that procurement understanding as well as the diversion understanding. And that's who we're typically helping is large companies. We're working on procurement management, diversion optimization, various types of employee engagement. We'll make videos or online modules. We have an extensive data collection group that manages everything from waste and energy and water through greenhouse gas footprinting. And then we also do a lot of sustainability reporting. Sometimes that's internal efforts to drive sustainability, but a lot of the time it's external public-facing reports. Personally, I've had a lot of experience in these areas, and I focus a bit more on like large hospitality projects, sustainable sports, that creative stakeholder engagement, and the greenhouse gas management and reporting.
Yeah, and we're talking massive amounts of waste when you're talking about sports. It's like, and if you're me and you go to these events, even at the University of Arizona, the basketball games, it's just massive amounts of waste. And they're doing things to it. I think most universities are doing things to kind of mitigate that or at least manage it in some ways. But what a role. So it's a perfect segue, because the reason that we got to get you on the show is because of our wonderful experience that we have every year at Green Biz. We are huge fans of Joel McCower and his incredibly impactful team. And so we were in Scottsdale earlier this year. It seems like it was only yesterday. And then on the other hand, it seems like it was 4 years ago. But So through your partnership with Green Biz and the JW Marriott, not a small concern either, you set the goal of having that event be a zero waste event. And if I remember correctly, the last announcement was that you were 99% successful, which is maybe that's like 100%. But take some time to explain, and I would love you to go into detail of what that means to be a zero waste event for 1,000 people at a hotel and what your part was in terms of Waste Management making that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's there are a really fun group to work with. We love what they do, and
they're awesome. They're just awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun conference to be a part of. And we love that they really try to walk the walk, and that's what, you know, our coordination with them has done over the last few years. So just kind of going back to your question, the industry standard for zero waste is 90% diversion or higher.
Wow, so you exceeded that.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I think our team is always trying to put 100% as the goal, even if it seems like it's, a pretty big obstacle, mostly because that drives the right pre-event planning and the engagement to be as detailed as possible on the front end. And that's what we helped GreenBiz with. So we, for GreenBiz and for other events, we understand what's acceptable locally. We understand the outlets of where everything's going, and we work backwards to control the procurement and engage everyone involved. So for an event, that's whoever's managing the events, the venue, the vendors, exhibitors, operational vendors, and of course the people that are actually attending. And we work with everyone to control what's coming in the event boundaries, so we know that it has a place to go. And for GreenBiz in particular, the part of the reason we're able to get such high numbers that we feel are really valid is that, and why I like working at Waste Management, is we really prioritize being thorough. In this case, it means that when we're working towards a zero waste event, whenever possible, we try to have sorting on the back end. So everything that was coming out of that whole GreenBiz boundary for all of their event operations was being sorted by a team in the back before it actually got disposed of. And that's how we were able to weigh everything and be specific about the issues that we saw and report back to you and the other attendees about, you know, ways people can have a positive impact on the conference.
And it wasn't a back shelf little announcement in the program. First of all, they don't print programs, which I also love, but it was front and center, and we were reminded of it on a regular basis. But go into a little bit of detail about the kinds of things, like when you say we're managing the back end, the weighing things. What are you trying to not have waste? You know, like I know food waste, the JW Marriott did not have lots of things out there baking in the hot sun, even though it was February. It was kind of toasty. Obviously, no water bottles. But there are other things that we might not think of as being as visible. What kinds of things are you trying to achieve zero waste around?
And that's why, that's a great question. That's why I mentioned the 100% always being your goal, because it really becomes these little details. One example is that in the GreenBiz area, there were four teams at the venue that were responsible for dealing with materials. So we have to get in front of all those teams, understand what they're planning on using, and then try to eliminate the things that are actually going to cause landfill waste. So if it's the coffee, if it's the really simple example that everyone understands, is the coffee team that puts out what you see at a conference, a table and sugar packets and tea packets and coffee items. And there's what we did with GreenBiz is make sure that everything in that entire area was compostable. So when it comes down to it, you have to decide which items are not actually going to be able to be diverted from landfill and try to replace them with ones that can be. And that's what I meant by controlling everything that's coming in. Every vendor, every operational partner that uses stuff, we gave them surveys, we called them, we tried to get into the details of what they bring on site, and so we can prepare for everything that comes towards us.
And who's on a team? Is it someone from the Marriott and someone from Waste Management and someone from GreenBiz? What comprises those teams of four? Or those four teams?
Oh, the four teams are specifically Marriott employees. So there's,
got it.
And that's what's
okay.
complicated at a big venue.
Yes.
When you have, you know, you think about how many employees touch the waste stream at a conference for 1,000 people over 4 days. You need to set up a training program that doesn't let anything slip through the cracks and talks to every one of them and understands their potential issues and their questions and gives them guidance instead of just, you know, throwing some standards in front of them and assuming everything works properly. Because in our experience, it doesn't. And we want to encourage and bring everyone together towards the goal instead of just, you know, setting up requirements.
And is part of your charge to do the training for those teams?
Our team will coordinate with GreenBiz and train their volunteers and train the hotel staff. That hotel has been used for a few years, and what you see at events that, you know, are in the same place over time is they become a more well-oiled machine.
They've got it.
The same employees remember it. those employees loved it. It was really fun being back at house at Green Biz this year.
Well, if you're there, I'm going to ask to come back and see it and do maybe a little do a little video. What about the food waste? How do you handle that? There cannot be a conference for 1,000 people without some food waste. So how is that handled?
Yeah, no, that's always a priority when we're talking about optimizing diversion at any type of facility. So for GreenBiz, we evaluated the vendors in the area that would take food waste and ones that we had as an approved vendor, meaning we knew where this stuff was going and that it was being handled properly. And we kind of worked backwards, like I said, about the recycling part, where we said, here's what they accept. Go into the kitchens, go into the front of house, make sure all of that stuff can actually be disposed of in the compost and have that positive, you know, ending. And back to your question, we tried to divide, according to what GreenBiz asked, actually, they wanted to understand what was edible food waste and what was inedible food waste. When you're cutting open, you know, 100 watermelons, the rinds that are left over are compostable, but it's not really wasted food. So they wanted to understand the distinction between those two elements. And it was really interesting seeing attendees see the massive amount of, you know, prep waste compared to what was actually being thrown away at meals, which was significantly smaller and really spoke to the effort that GreenBiz and the attendees were taking on.
It was amazing. I mean, it feels really good to be there, especially if you're a consciously living human being. And just for this event, let's just take this event because we're going to go into the Phoenix Open in a bit, for quite a bit. But anyway, what do you do? What's the biggest challenge when there's things like GreenBiz, it's on a campus or a location, is the biggest challenge for the participants, is it that everybody wants a plastic bottle and there are none, which made me very happy. I did not see one plastic bottle at that event, and I am not kidding. There were lots of reusable bottles. There were lots of water stations. We got to know the people at Companion. So what is the biggest challenge from your experience in doing this? Is there one that sticks out that you say, oh, Gina, we never know what to do about this, or this is the hardest?
There's really two. The first one is where the event is. So if you're in an area that has no recycling or compost solutions nearby, it's really challenging to execute those programs. You can usually find a smaller, like, farm that will take food waste, for example. We've done that in the past. But when you have those infrastructure obstacles, it's complicated. So we're always talking to events about actually looping us in when they're choosing their venue, because we can give them some insight that'll make their program easier or more challenging. And then the thing that most people, if you have that infrastructure available, the challenge that's pretty common is kind of what I was talking about, of the controlling, understanding and controlling everything that comes in. It's usually you miss some details of someone is preparing food or someone is bringing things to give away and, you know, the event organizers don't know every single detail. It's just a challenge to really grasp every element of your operations. I mean, things happen at events. Anyone that manages events or understand that anything can happen at any point. And so with material management, it's that kind of grasping that front end and controlling everything. And kind of what you were saying, if you go to Starbucks and you bring in these cups that have to go to landfill, it can be a problem. So it's also controlling what your attendees are bringing in. It's every single stakeholder needs to be addressed properly.
And that's a great answer. It's one that I did not expect, because it makes sense to me now that you have solutions for the stuff. I would like to be more articulate than that, but you have you have information on what to do to dispose of things. But getting people to rally around this big, huge intention and operation, I can see that. It's people management that becomes the challenge, not the management of waste in many ways. So I understand. There's a lot of margin for error there, I can imagine. So we are going to take a really short break, and I'm so happy that I timed this one right, because we really want to get into the Phoenix Open. And I have to tell you this, when I started delving into the research for this, and just, it's right up the street, to find the numbers of attendees, the list goes on and on and on. I'm not going to steal any of your thunder, but when we come back, I'd really like to spend a lot of the next segment talking about how this all happened, how it came about. And when you talk about people management, it's not like all the greenies that we are at Green Biz. It's golfers and their families, and you know, the list goes on, and there are many, many of them. So everybody, if you just joined us, make sure you rewind this podcast. We'll be right back with Lee Spivak from Waste Management. Stay here with us.
Please join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. You can also find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and SpeakUp Radio. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or others, please write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But now, back to our story.
Hey, everybody. I am Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World, and we thank you for being a part of it. And if you like what you hear, which many of you do, we would love it, and I would like to make this personal request, that you check us out at patreon.com/Mrs. Green's World and consider becoming a Mrs. Green's World member. We would love your support. We'd love to start a whole nother show with more timely topics, and your support can help us continue to provide the creative broadcasting that we do, as well as help us grow. So that's Patreon, patreon.com/Mrs. Green's World. And I'd love to see some of your names show up there as Mrs. Green's World members, and you will reap the rewards because there are some. So we are spending this hour talking about one of America's biggest challenges, waste, and what to do with it. And joining me this hour to talk about a myriad of creative and impactful initiatives that Waste Management, the largest environmental solutions provider in North America, are implementing is Lee Spivak. He's a Sustainability Services Senior Associate for Waste Management, and he is taking on, with his team, a huge piece of waste specifically for this show in the event arena, which is how Mrs. Green's World became familiar with it. So Lee, again, thanks for being here and having such a passion for one of our biggest problems and one that we get our head around will help to really impact climate change. So segue to 1,000 people, let's be honest, a controlled environment, partners that are in, buy-in from the Marriott. You had a crowd that at some level is committed to zero waste or reducing waste. Not to minimize the effort at all, because I don't want to do that. But it's different from the next crowd I want you to talk to us about, which is the Phoenix Open. I mean, it is mind-boggling. I'm not being a drama queen, even though I claim that. I would really like to delve into detail. It's the biggest attended golf tournament in the world. I'm sure that I researched that correctly. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's massive. You are not being overly dramatic. It's this year it was over 700,000 people in 7 days. Specifically, it was 719,179 people.
That's
in those
almost
7 days.
A million people at a golf tournament. So yeah, I'm making the leap. It will be a million. So tell us about this tournament and this aspect of not only that, but the end of the story is that we'll talk about the title of the greenest show on grass, and you know, high praise to whoever came up with that clever moniker. It's pretty impressive. But tell us about your efforts there and take all the time you want, because I want to know a lot about what you're doing there and how you manage it. I can't get my head around it. So help us get our heads around it.
Well, let me make it sound even more ridiculous.
great. I'm already sweating.
Yeah. So a lot of events that we manage and other people manage that would be considered zero waste events, you're primarily doing the material management for the days of the event. Green Biz is a really good example. Their setup is included, but it's just the day before the event. It's really nothing crazy. For the Open, setup starts in October and ends in May. So we are tracking, we're tracking everything for about 8 months every year. All of the construction and demolition, the deconstruction, I should say, is part of our scope. We track our fuel usage during that time. We understand that we can't just claim zero waste if we're doing those 7 days, because there's a huge amount of material that's generated and disposed of because of the buildup and breakdown of the event. To add to that, during the actual week, it's a whole golf course that's in our boundary, but there's also a massive expo with a variety of expo vendors and the Bird's Nest, which I believe last year was the largest temporary tent in North America. So you can picture how many people are fitting in that every night. And it's 4 nights of concerts, and that's in our scope as well. So that's I just kind of wanted to give you the proper understanding of the boundary, because it's an important lesson to learn that it's not just what you're doing in the moment, but it's how you prepare and how you close out that effort that you should be keeping track of, and you can't just isolate those things.
So the tournament, to put some clarity here, the tournament is actually at the end of January, right? And you start start in October, and you stop when? In May?
In May, yeah. So wow. The starting in October is because there's a lot of structures that are put together. Specifically, the Waste Management Phoenix Open is really known for the 16th hole, where they build a stadium around the hole every year. It's a par three. It might be the loudest hole in all of golf.
Hole on earth. That might be another description that they can claim. Oh my gosh.
There's a lot of cheering. I always feel bad for the guy who's, you know, trying to uphold the golf rules and asking everyone to be quiet, because it's, you know, that whole, when the players walk in there, they know that it's fun. It's quite an environment. And that, again, just speaks to the whole tournament's a bit like that. And that kind of speaks to the effort that we're trying to work with a really diverse group of people. Like, as you said, some of them maybe are not aware of our efforts or aren't as invested in them. And some of whom, like you, care about it in great detail and want to learn as much as possible. We really started the focus on sustainability before I was with the company. The focus on sustainability for the tournament before I was with the company. When we became the title sponsor, the first effort, which we often recommend to people when they're trying to get started on this, is baselining your first year. So in 2011, we did a full baseline of all the operations. And after that, it was actually Michelle Grossman, who is the managing principal on our team, who was on a planning call and said, what if we take all the trash cans off the course and go for zero waste?
Oh my gosh. Was there a silence?
Yeah.
Was there a silence?
I was just going to say, it was pretty quiet from what I hear. I wasn't on the call, but it was pretty quiet for a few seconds. But it wasn't because people were scared of the idea. It actually kind of made sense to everyone. And people were thinking through, for their portion of the planning and the operations, how do they go for it? And we just kind of went for it. So in 2012, which was the year before I started working on it more intensely, took all the trash cans off the course, did a whole procurement focus to get everything to be started to go to the right place, like I was talking about. And that year it was 97% diversion. And then every year after that, it's been 100%. And every year we try to, the Open's this amazing opportunity to, I guess it's our chance to showcase what we think is possible, but it's also a chance to educate and engage fans and really show people what we want to strive for everywhere. Proper material management and diversion with the smallest environmental impact and footprint as possible. And so it's been a lot of fun working on it. It's been 5 years now working on the 2019, and have been for a few months. And we've gotten a few certifications over the years that kind of speak to these efforts. In 2013, we started pursuing the Council for Responsible Sport certification to verify our comprehensive sustainability efforts. It has planning, procurement, you know, material and resource management, including energy and water and greenhouse gases. And then there's a whole social side of it too. There's the legacy and access and equity part of it. So we really, that kind of spoke to our comprehensive effort. And then we also started having UL validate our zero waste efforts. And UL goes into insane detail on the front end of trying to understand the things that are going to be on site, And then they want even more detail on the back end. So it's not just where it goes initially, but they want to see where everything is processed at its final location. And that's why we started pursuing that validation, because to us, these two offered a lot of validity. And we improved every year across both of them. And then in 2017, we were actually the first golf tournament to earn the Golf Environmental Organization Sustainable Tournament Certification. They go by GEO, and they do a sustainable golf course certification and tournament certification. And we were very fortunate to be the first ones to apply and achieve it. So it's been, like I said, it's been a lot of fun over the last 5 years. A lot of change from that initial, you know, let's try to get everything off the course, to this complete program that I'm sure we'll get into more detail about. We can kind of delve into any area you want.
Yeah, and that third-party certification, that's the validity. I mean, that's like the seal of approval, and you certainly have that. It's not just you guys saying that and managing it and your partners all agreeing. It's really very, very data-driven, and you're looking at all of the metrics and measuring and all of that. So to me, the one of the most impressive things is that third-party certifiers and you know, validation. It's huge. So I think there's so many questions that are coming up for me. I'll try to like download them into my speech, you know, but I think when most people, John Q. Public, which I am, think about waste, I think about things like plastic bottles, what kind of utensils, what kind of plates, what kind of napkins. I think about visible things, and I don't think I'm alone in that. There's that, which I'd love you to talk about. Now I think a lot about food waste, and I'm sure these are two big ones in your achievements that you focus on. Then there are things that I just would like you to just highlight again, because we go so fast. But when I got involved with the University of Arizona, and then I had the head of the Green Football League for doing the Super Bowl, I had the head of the sustainability for the NFL on the show. You put into this mix things like that you can't see, like how many people drive and how many people fly there. And like you said, transportation. How much of that goes into what is measured? Because I know when I worked with the U of A on their doing their homecoming, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. They had to measure how many rooms were used on campus and what their energy use was, you know, how many people. I mean, it is so much more than the average person gets. There's a lot to what you're doing that impacts our Earth in such a positive way. So what are some of those things that you can't see that you're measuring?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, in the sense that I'm going to get a little sidetracked before I fully answer you.
That's okay.
Because
I can bring us
back.
Yeah,
there's perfect. So I guess I mentioned that because when you talk about unseen materials, it makes me think about the groups that are making this happen that you don't necessarily know are constructing the circumstances for us to even pursue these ideals. And so I kind of want to just take a step back.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to give credit where credit's due, because I guess people always ask how we do this. And one of my consistent answers is that there's kind of two or three teams that I'll get into right now that really kind of handle the details. The first is the Thunderbirds. They're the organization that actually puts on the Phoenix Open. They have for over 80 years. And while we've been the title sponsor, I bring them up because they have been exceptionally supportive of our material management goals, our water restoration campaign, prioritizing renewable energy. They are just the best partner we could ask for. They created a sustainability chairman and team in their planning efforts to make sure that everything is not only maintained every year, but it's improved. And I say that because that's an unseen effort. We have this group that we are coordinating with for the whole event. They put it on. And they're backing everything. So when we go to the vendors and say, these are the rules, we have the person who's, you know, hiring the vendors
right
to go to bat for us.
Right.
And that's something that I just feel like people don't always see and is really impactful and valuable in any organization.
And it's great that you mentioned that, because you can't do it without them. So that's really, really an important point to bring up. So go on.
No, that's exactly right. And the other group that I can't do it without, because I don't want to take credit where I don't deserve it, is our operations team. When we started the Zero Waste Challenge in 2012, they just ran with it, like I said. And my team works tirelessly on the front end and the on-course engagement. But our operations team is actually handling these different materials streams. Our on-course, what we call them zone managers, they handle different portions of the course, are actually making everything run smoothly so you don't notice them. That's the whole goal, is to just kind of everything be seamless. And then our local operations that actually takes all these materials and sorts every single product and every single material so it can go to the right place on the back end is something that I just, you know, we do all this front end work, but that's the thoroughness that I was speaking to earlier that we prioritize. And it's a big team, and I call these groups out because they deserve the credit, along with our marketing communications team. They not only engage people beforehand and during the event in creative, valuable ways, but on course, everything just looks really nice. So when you're dealing with all this massive amount of material and trash, what people are seeing is the structures and the colors that are set up on course and the marketing and the branding and the education that's on signage and the education that's on these clever leaderboard slogans. So I'm going to kind of answer your question now, but I just wanted to shout those things out because those are three elements that I think transfer to other events and other organizations that people can learn from that kind of commitment.
It's huge, and it's a significant part, I think, of the conversation in how you pull it off. You can't. It's the invisible magic makers behind the scenes that are, like you said. I'm thrilled that you mentioned the operations team because the front work is really important, and then I don't want to say the grunt work in a disparaging way, but the real rubber hits the road work is when the waste starts coming in. It's like, that's a big effort.
When there's 219,000 people there on a Saturday,
it blows my mind.
Everything needs to go smoothly. It's not.
Oh my gosh.
So going back to your question, which was fantastic about these materials you don't see. So the way that we, when I was speaking about engaging everyone earlier on, what we try to do is every year we develop a material requirements document, and it's not just requirements. It's supportive. It's offering resources and solutions for problems. And we engage every single vendor that comes on site with that requirements document. There's a survey that they fill out to reinforce things. They get phone calls. We check in with them on site. And every year we try to expand who we're talking to. So our focus, like you said, was initially around food waste and making sure that everything that fans were touching was controlled. So it was really about expo vendors and the food vendors. And as over the last few years, we've expanded more to the operational vendors, security, TV production, these potentially unseen groups where you have to manage these materials. We engage them with the requirements. They get on board. We help them solve problems on site and beforehand. And then the other side of that is the fans, because it's 700,000 people and they want to bring things in. And a few years ago, the PGA Tour set up these security requirements where fans can't really bring in bags that aren't bigger than a small purse. And bags typically have to be clear. So it really prevents people from bringing in those outside materials that are really challenging to deal with. And we're actually able to have a bit more of a controlled setting. And more at events, that's not uncommon. These security lines don't really let you bring in bottled water. They
totally
don't let you bring
right.
in food. Yeah, and those are the problematic materials that we're dealing with. That's kind of how we get into the details, the shrink wrap that's in the kitchen and the sternos that are back of house, these items that fans don't really see that, you know, really pile up when you talk about back of house operations.
And so, and do all of the players involved, you and your partners, do you typically, is this something that you highlight with the fans? Because to me, there's such a possibility for a ripple effect of consciousness around, is it promoted that it is a zero waste event like it is at Green Biz?
Yeah, definitely. It's actually a few years ago, after being successful with the zero waste initiatives, our marketing team shift the language to call it the zero waste event, just because it's the largest verified zero waste event in the world. So it's from some perspective, it's a bit more challenging than other events, and we're able to kind of highlight that as part of our main messaging campaign. That and the Greenest Show on Grass have been going on for several years now, so it's just a part of the DNA and in how we talk about the event.
And every time I say the greenest show on grass, I get a smile. It's good. It's a good name. It's a really good name.
That's front and center.
Yeah, yeah. So believe it or not, we are up on another break, and I have lots more questions, but this is what we're going to have to do is take a very quick break, come back with more from Lee Spivak from Waste Management. And when we come back, you can think about this for 30 seconds, Lee. To me, there are economic, environmental, and social impacts for what you're doing. It's not just about an event, and I would love for you to spend some time highlighting what you think are some of the accomplishments in these areas. That's just my first question. Everybody, stay here with me. We'll be right back with this fascinating interview.
Hi, it's Meredith, a proud member of the Mrs. Green's World team. We are disruptors for good, passionate game changers working to create a more sustainable, safer, healthier, and socially just planet for all. By creating podcasts like this one, we offer tangible solutions that inspire you to take action. We need your financial support to continue producing content, podcasts, film, and written works that engage, educate, and inspire our global community to fight climate change. Join us today. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click Join the Movement.
Hey, everybody. This is Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, and we thank you for that and for being a part of our world. Waste, one of America's biggest challenges. In case you were not aware of it, there is one company in the United States who has the biggest task of helping us find solutions for how to handle our massive amounts of waste, and that company is Waste Management. It is the largest environmental solutions provider in North America, serving more than 21 million municipal, commercial, and industrial customers in the United States and Canada. It is also noteworthy to me that Waste Management fleet of natural gas trucks is the largest heavy-duty truck fleet of its kind in North America. And joining us for this hour to share some of the more exciting and innovative best practices at Waste Management is Lee Spivak, who is the Sustainability Services Senior Associate for Waste Management. Lee, it is so great to have you here, and time is flying. So back to my question, there's so many positive impacts for what you're accomplishing just at the Phoenix Open. I think they're massive. Can you speak a little bit about it is an economic impact for Phoenix. It is an environmental impact for the planet. And there are social impacts because you're raising consciousness. So just highlight a little bit on each one of those areas, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking about these things, too. And again, I'm going to give the Thunderbirds a lot of credit because they're a charitable organization that takes the money from the Open and donates it throughout the year. It's one of the largest golf fundraisers, I believe, in the country, raising over $10 million a year at this point. And if you want to learn more, you can go to thunderbirdscharities.org. But they're just incredible. They put money into the Arizona community in exactly where you'd want it, giving it to the people that need it most, getting healthcare to people that don't have access to hospitals, legacy projects that support youth education and engagement, athletic facilities for people with disabilities, programs at children's hospitals. It's just, it's the most incredible work. Yeah,
yes.
It's massive. And they actually commissioned an economic impact study in 2017 with ASU that calculated the impact was over $389 million from all of the Phoenix Open activities.
And they support statewide. They don't even just keep it in Phoenix. I mean, I'm well aware of their good work. So yeah, hats off to Thunderbird. Okay, go on.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thanks. It's amazing. They're a fantastic partner. And just the environments, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on during the tournament too. There's a lot of youth engagement. The Patriots Outpost is any military retired or active gets, you know, can come into the 18th hole with a guest and they get a great view and free food. There's all these social efforts that go on site too. When you were talking about the environmental aspect, we've talked a lot about material management, but we like to see waste in the larger sense. That when you say no waste, it's not just materials. And that's one of the certifications that I was talking about earlier. It goes so far beyond just material management. And we've been able to earn those because of this kind of priority and we have programs for water conservation and restoration and renewable energy and alternative fuels, greenhouse gas management, on top of these economic and social programs.
That's really big. So you manage the water. It's a big thing with golf courses in general. So do you work with other entities? Like here we have watershed management groups. So do you, again, it involves partners on how do you conserve the water?
Yeah, this is maybe my favorite topic to talk about.
Yay!
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So there's two parts of our water program. There's the on-site conservation. For years now, we've eliminated hand washing stations, so it's just hand sanitizer. There's gray water capture, so we capture about 6,000 gallons of water from all the major cooking and cleaning areas, and we use that in the portalets, so we're not using as much fresh water. But then we did really well with that and did as much conservation on site wherever possible. And in 2014, we learned about Bonneville Environmental Foundation, and they have water restoration certificates, where they do programs on actual rivers where they're reducing wasted water, and they're tracking that and verifying it through legitimate sources. And you can basically, in a way, offset your water you can offset your water activity while also supporting future projects, because they take that money and just reinvest it into new projects. So we offset all of our water usage through them in 2014. And then in 2015, we wanted to do more. We wanted to support the region. So we joined BEF, Bonneville Environmental Foundation. We joined BEF's Change the Course campaign, which you can look up. And with the Thunderbirds' major support and donations from other sponsors that we brought in, since then, over the last 4 years, we've restored over 236 million gallons of water to the Colorado River Basin and mainly now the Verde River in Arizona. As a result, it's supporting the local economy. It's supporting local farmers. Specifically, the number of projects in Arizona from when we started in 2014 has grown from 1 to 15 today. And now kind of we're working on this every year, trying to grow the impact. Waste management and is really about getting other businesses on board to understand that this is an easy thing to do. It's a valuable thing to do. And it really supports your entire community. So that's kind of our water program in a nutshell. And it's been a lot of fun to develop.
I always want to ring the bell when answers like this come out, just say, oh my gosh, because water, of course, in the desert Southwest is a hot topic on a regular basis. I mean, our water departments in this state are working collaboratively to face what we believe will be here sooner than later, which is the issue of water availability, something that people in the United States have not ever had to face. But if things keep going the way they're going, let's be honest, we're doing prevention, and it's really, really important. What a great answer, Lee, and thank you for that. And I think our listeners, especially in and around the Southwest, will want to hear that information, because a lot of people think of the big water use for golf courses. And from my experience in doing other interviews and reading, lots of them are on board with minimizing their use of water, and it's recharged and there's gray water. So those efforts are, when you talk about it at the Phoenix Open, then there's scale. What about CO2 emissions? I think you touched on it briefly, and you might not even know the answer to this, but because of the transportation, I mean, people are flying in, their cars, the number that drive to the event, how can you impact that, or do you?
So that's a great question, and I'm always readily admitting areas that we can improve on. When it comes to attendee transportation, there's a lot of ways to reduce it that are implemented through ride sharing, public transportation.
Right, right.
But that's an area that it's so hard to track for us. We've really struggled with that over the years, and we have some estimates out there, but I think it's something that we're going to really push for a better understanding and reduction of over the next few years. What we do work on is anything that we can control,
right,
which is really all of what we would refer to as the scope one emissions from the event. We only use, it's 100% renewable power. All of the generators on site are using biodiesel, or they have been hooked into the renewable power if that wasn't available. There's solar equipment on site wherever possible. There's a lot of solar lights, the small kind of big belly solar compactors, as well as the large solar compactors. And for anything we can't control that we can still track on that scope one element, we buy offsets for. So that includes all player travel, all operations. Like I said, our trucks, the hauling from October through May when we do our final haul, all of that is included in our scope one. And we actually, in the last 2 years, purchased offsets to also cover all vendor and volunteer travel. So any element that we can track that, you know, this, when you talk about 700,000 people and getting a statistically significant understanding of how they're traveling to the event, it's a little more complicated, but we do, we survey everyone we possibly can with the actual event operations elements, and we track those. We put it publicly in our sustainability report that we publish every year, and we buy offsets for them as well.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's another great answer, and I'm not just saying that. It really, for this conversation, it's so important that listeners understand there's a piece of them in this for all of us. When I go to a sporting event here or in Phoenix or anywhere, carpooling. If you're in LA now, you can take the light rail. In Phoenix, there's the light rail. There's so many things now to just think about it. If your friends are going, you might be able to drive one car instead of four. Instead of saying, I'll meet you there, it's like, where do you want to meet? And we can all go. But this is what's going to take the village to shift the CO2 emission challenge. And it's why I wanted you on the show, because all of this is related to our mission, which is, you know, slowing down the advancement of climate change. And this does. This is a massive effort. What kind of impact do you think you're having, or have you observed, or do you know, for others to duplicate these efforts around the country? I'm seeing it more. You're much more in the know. Major sporting events, are more and more of those entities and sports getting on board with the whole zero waste and contributing to the effort?
Yeah, it's definitely a growing priority across sports and events. We work with other sporting events and to try to help them with these other elements. But outside of the work that we do, I'm definitely seeing an increase in golf in particular. There's more tournaments that are working towards zero waste. There's a few that have achieved the Council for Responsible Sport and now the GEO certifications. And we offer our consulting services, like I said, whenever tournaments are interested.
Right.
But we love this type of progress. We love seeing how sustainability should be a priority in golf and really all sporting events. It's just a message and a platform that fans get behind, especially younger fans. And it just enables sporting events to be responsible and go beyond the sphere of influence that they have on site. It, you know, really extends beyond the event.
Right. And what I find typically when those things happen, you know, there's all kinds of what I call gateways to consciousness. Then there's sometimes a transference from this experience to what you're doing in your home or your work environment. It's funny, the ripple effect that something like this can have that you'll never be able to measure, but that is equally as important. So here's my next question. You're at the center of the data. You have the numbers. You help make all the wheels on the bus for this big green event and others go round and round. So from your perspective and what you know, what are some of the biggest challenges left that you have to address and overcome to continue to achieve outstanding success as a significant partner to keep making the greenest show on grass get even greener? But, I mean, I'm sure you understand the question. What are the biggest challenges? Other than, I think you addressed one. There's some things you can't measure, like all the transportation pieces. So what keeps you up nights?
Well, I kind of have two answers, and one is related to the Open, and one is kind of all other events, because that's what I think about is, you know, I think at the Open, we've really honed in and had a lot of successful campaigns and a lot of positive impact. There's a great deal of education that goes on. Like I said, really efforts that kind of start at the event and then make people go home and rethink how they do things at their workplace or at their sporting events. And that kind of is the goal related to the Open to me, is how do we take this? how do we continue to grow our efforts, but really make people feel compelled to mimic them in other places and understand that these things can be replicated. I think when I think about other events and what they can do across really wherever they're at is really focusing on a culture shift, which I know is a big thing to unpack. But it's not something that happens immediately, but I think that one of the essential parts to that people often overlook is the initial planning, overarching sustainability goals. Events and companies have financial goals, marketing goals, engagement or education goals, and sustainability isn't necessarily seen as something that needs that goal mark almost, but it really reinforces all those other priorities. It's what you said earlier. Greenhouse gas emissions are proven to hurt the environment. Water scarcity is hurting communities, and the materials that we use, their full potential just isn't optimized through disposal a lot of the time. And so this isn't really perspective at this point. It's happening, and it's impacting communities. And so there are three goals that you can set as an organization: greenhouse gas management and offsets, water conservation and restoration, and optimized diversion. These things have a positive socioeconomic impact in your community, and just simply stating your goals, even if it's just internally, taking them to the people involved or taking them to your shareholders and saying, here's what we're working towards. Please join us in this effort because look at all these positive outcomes. These goals can compel organizers to evaluate every single element of operations and actually understand your entire footprint. So that's kind of, to me, what is sometimes lacking when events are trying to pursue sustainability initiatives.
Right. Another great thing for all of us to think about and the impact we can have in all of the places that our lives touch. Talk about the definition of optimized diversion. That's kind of a term inside the industry. What does that mean, optimized diversion?
Great. Sorry, I didn't mean to skirt over that. Yeah, it's really about making sure that whatever material you're using has the best possible reuse. So in some cases, that's reusing a product over and over again. In other cases, you can say, this cup can either go to landfill or it can get recycled, or if it's compostable, it can get composted. All of those minor choices add up to greenhouse gas emissions and actual impacts. So it's really about, across everything that you're using, trying to prioritize the best overall environmental impact for your choices.
Got it. That's really another great answer. And I have a little anecdote that happened yesterday, because one of the joys in our lives and the Green Team is having green teams in companies. So we're working with an organization that has 27 car dealerships in Arizona alone, and we're working with 7 of them. But another green team was with a big hotel, a hub in Tucson, Arizona. And I was talking to the sommelier yesterday, and he is not on the green team, but we make presentations to all the staff. And this just crystallizes what you said. He told me about going to his daughter's school. She's in a charter school, and he's on the parent advisory council. And one of the people brought up water bottle use. And he said, do you know we use 600 to 800 water bottles every day at lunch? So his awareness, because of being on the green team, he wants to do something about it. And that's the kind of impact that you don't ever know you're having immediately when you're working with people to raise their awareness. So thank you, Lee. This has been a great interview. We have less than 2 minutes left. It's like, what the heck? So I hope you're as pleased with the show as I was. Your answers were stellar. I thoroughly enjoyed my time. And thank you for what you're doing, you and your team and Waste Management, on all of our behalf. Everybody, September 13th, I'm doing a show that I've wanted to do for a long time. It's one of our local shows. Nick from EcoPest, the impact of pesticides that we willingly put in our yards and in our homes will be rather shocking to all of you, and they don't do it. And then on September 18th, Lee Paiva, who's the founder of No Means No Worldwide, and she's part of an anti-rape program that's been proven to be about 97% effective in some third world countries. So that's part of our social justice commitment. Lee, thanks for all you're doing. People can find out more by visiting wm.com/US waste management. And thanks and good luck with everything you have coming up in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. If you want to learn more, you can also go to wmsustainabilityservices.com.
Okay, that's great. Good plug. Everybody, make it a great green, intentionally minimized waste week. And thanks for being a part of our world.